This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America on this edition of the program, The Political and Humanitarian Crisis in Yemen. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. 3 years ago this month, Houthi rebels seized control of Yemen's capital, Sana'a. The Houthi rebels, once a party who represented the demands of the Zaydis, a group who accounts for about one-third of the country's 26 million people, drove the government of Abu Rabu Mansur Hadi from power in January 2015. But what was once seen as a largely domestic fight has been transformed into an arena for the regional feud between Iran and Saudi Arabia. The Saudi-led coalition, which receives military support from the United States, entered the war in March 2015 to restore the Hadi government and dislodge the Houthi, whom the Saudis accuse of acting as an Iranian proxy force, a charge the Houthi have long denied. But the military quagmire has deepened as diplomatic solutions prove elusive. Meantime, aid agencies call Yemen the world's worst humanitarian disaster. A third of Yemen's population are facing famine. A cholera outbreak that affected roughly 1 million is one of the largest ever recorded. More than 10,000 people have been killed since the war began. To make matters worse, Yemen is home to AQAP, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, one of the most potent Al-Qaeda affiliates. Some analysts argue that the Saudi-led coalition's military intervention and indiscriminate airstrikes, which have cost the lives of hundreds of civilians, including children, has made few strategic gains and have instead alienated Yemenis in a way that makes them vulnerable to Al-Qaeda and even the so-called Islamic State. Well, for more on the roots of and solutions to the crisis in Yemen, we turn to two distinguished analysts. Ambassador Stephen Sesh is a 35-year veteran of the U.S. Foreign Service. Among his many senior posts, he served as ambassador to Yemen from 2007 to 2010. Currently, he's executive vice president of the Arab Gulf States Institute, and that's a think tank here in Washington. And Catherine Zimmerman, she's research fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and the research manager for AEI's Critical Threats Project. And both guests join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carol. Great to be here.
Well, Ambassador Sesh, let me begin with you. As we said, this conflict has been going on for over 3 years. Remind us briefly of the roots of this devastating conflict and why has it dragged on for so long?
Well, I suppose we need to begin then with the grievances that the Houthis themselves have brought to the table, and they go back a long while. And as you said yourself, Carol, this is an indigenous group of people. The Zaydi are Yemeni. The Houthis are an element within the Zaydi Shia community. They are not engineered in Iran or produced by the Iranians. They are native Yemeni, and their grievances spring from relationships that went really badly with the government, mostly of Ali Abdullah Saleh, the now deceased former president. And from 2004 to 2010, they fought a series of low-level conflicts with the Yemeni government. And then in 2011, you had the Arab uprising spread across the Middle East. Yemen got wrapped up in that. The Houthis played a role in the National Dialogue Conference, became part of an effort to find an alternative to Saleh and that autocratic government of his, and that didn't go well. And after a while, the Houthis slowly and incrementally, and this was kind of a surprise to me, and I don't know how many others really saw this happening, but they slowly crept their way down into Sana'a in September 2014, took over the capital, assumed the reins of government, and then continued further south until they basically controlled an enormous swath of Yemeni territory. And that's when the alarm bells went off in Saudi Arabia. And that's when Saudis came in March of 2015.
Indeed. Turning to you, Catherine, anything to add or subtract to the roots of this devastating conflict and why it's been dragging on so long?
I think the ambassador summed up the Houthi grievances very well. But what's also been caught up in the conflict are not just the grievances of the Houthis, but some of the other opposition groups in Yemen that felt as though the National Dialogue Conference, the result of the Arab Spring transition of power away from the late President Saleh, they felt that their grievances weren't actually represented by the Hadi government. So these are the Southerners. And we're starting to see that flare up today inside of Aden, where the recognized government is based. So yes, there is this Iran-Saudi dynamic. There's also the Houthi dynamic. But there are these local grievances that are all tied up in the civil war, and it complicates the solution such that it's not just resolving the grievances that the Houthis have in order to get to peace.
And Hadi is still president, right?
He is still the recognized president of Yemen.
But does not have much legitimacy, it appears.
He himself does not have much legitimacy, but it's interesting because a lot of Yemenis still believe the office of the presidency has a lot of legitimacy. So they're looking to fill that with somebody that they can look for. And I think that gets missed in the discussion when we're talking about Hadi himself and his office, which Yemenis do see as separate.
Turning back to you, Ambassador Sash, let's look at the Saudi involvement that started back in March 2015. To what extent do you think Saudi Arabia may have miscalculated, perhaps had good intentions in trying to repel what they thought as a threat, the Houthi rebels, who they see as being backed by their arch rival, Iran? To what extent do you think they may have miscalculated and perhaps created some sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy with respect to the Houthi, who are, as we said, indigenous to Yemen, but have now been bolstered by Iran more so than ever?
Well, I think what we see now is was an enormous miscalculation on the part of the Saudi government in March 2015. And I think we can all agree that the decision to intervene in the Yemen war made sense. I think, you know, the international community cannot stand idly by while an armed insurgency overthrows a legitimately installed government. So there's a good reason for the intervention. And I think the Saudis had very good reasons also to fear that the Houthis would be lobbing missiles across the border into their national territory, which they've certainly done a lot of in the intervening years, as well as doing cross-border incursions. So the Saudis, in principle, fine, but the execution has been just miserable. And I think what we see now is they've come in with no exit strategy, no real sense of how they're going to somehow subdue a deeply entrenched, heavily armed insurgency with an air war. And anyone who ever has followed these knows that's not how you're going to win a war. So they have not committed the number of ground forces they would need. They've left that to the Emiratis and some surrogates and some other locally formed militia now. But it's not been enough to really pressure the Houthis, who, again, are very much entrenched. They've been doing nothing but fighting for the last almost 14 years now. So they're very well versed in how to do this kind of warfare that they've been doing. And for the Houthis now, just not losing is winning. And you're right. I think as the Saudis got deeper and deeper involved, Iran saw opportunities for them also to come in and play a larger role. It's a very low-cost investment with a very high reward for the Iranians.
Indeed. Turning to you, Catherine, for your take on the Saudi involvement, to what extent they may have miscalculated, now are entrenched. Many of their airstrikes have hit women and children. Perhaps even if not intentionally, this has caused all kinds of uproar around the world. They used also a blockade. And, you know, this has turned what perhaps was originally well-intentioned into a disaster.
It has been a disaster strategically for Saudi Arabia and, I actually believe, for the United Arab Emirates inside of Yemen, because there is no exit strategy. There has not been a rapid culmination. We've seen various points where the Saudis and the Emiratis believed that the Houthis were about to fall. This would be when the coalition helped retake Aden back in 2015, when the coalition was able to finally split the late President Saleh from the Houthis. And again, what we're seeing is that actually the chips aren't falling into place. And a lot of that is based on some of the assumptions that have proven false. One of those more recently is that if President Saleh were to split from the Houthis, he would bring with him his entire network. And his death has led to the fracturing of that network. And there simply isn't a cohesive alliance against the Houthis strong enough to bring them down.
Well, back to you, Ambassador Sash, to see where we go from here to some extent. And what is the state of play as you see it, the various stakeholders and coalitions? Catherine earlier alluded to the South. There's something called the Transitional Political Council of the South. Who are all these players, and how do you see some sort of negotiations coming forward, especially as we acknowledge the role of Iran and Saudi Arabia?
Well, I think as Catherine's pointed out, we have to maintain an awareness that there are a lot of centers of gravity involved in the conflict in Yemen. It's not a binary Saudi, Hadi versus Iran Houthi arrangement, there are a whole lot of tribal, religious, geographic, sectarian influences, all of which, including Islah, which is the kind of a historically a Muslim Brotherhood organization, the GPC, which was President Saleh's party for the longest time, the General People's Congress. So all of these elements all have competing interests, and they're all jockeying for influence, position, advantage in this rather fractious kind of an environment we see, and how we get them all to sit down in some fashion, because we have to. I don't think you can run a negotiation that's only going to be the external parties and their agents or their allies inside of Yemen. I think it's going to be greatly enlarged in order to accommodate something finally that will feel inclusive to the people of Yemen and represent a number of different interests and competing interests. So this is going to be a real complication, and no one has even gotten close to wrestling this to the ground yet. Now we have a new, seemingly a new envoy coming in with the UN, and that may change some of the momentum. We hope something will change it, but Saleh's death didn't seem to do it. I had hoped it might, and we'll see if this can have any greater effect.
Catherine, your take on the various stakeholders involved, and what about the offshoot of Al-Qaeda, AQAP, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula? You're quite an expert on that. Where does all of this turmoil leave them? Are they stronger, weaker for it? And that's also a threat.
As the ambassador had noted, we actually have a place in Yemen where there are various centers of power. They're all trying to get a piece of the pie at the end of the day, and they're willing to align for short-term investment, and then will break off when they see it not working for them. So this is what's happening inside of the South, and we're likely going to see additional fracturing as groups actually recognize that to tag along with the Yemeni government or even with the Houthis is not in their long-term interests. What that means for Al-Qaeda is that there is a focus now on this anti-Houthi fight, and there is an effort by the Saudi-led coalition to bring all those actors together against the Houthis. Al-Qaeda named the Houthis an enemy in 2009, 2010, was attacking them then, and has really benefited from this anti-Houthi stance that it's taken. The challenge that it has is that actually the United States and the Emiratis have increased the pressure on Al-Qaeda in Yemen to the point now where I would say that its operations are somewhat disrupted. Its media capabilities have been degraded, though they're coming back. The question is whether we can sustain the pressure on Al-Qaeda at the same time as we actually negotiate a resolution. And by we, I'm hoping somebody, the United States, needs to take lead. The UN envoy coming in should certainly play a role. But we need to resolve the grievances. Otherwise, Al-Qaeda will continue to tap into them through pragmatic means.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are Ambassador Stephen Sesh. He's former ambassador to Yemen, currently executive vice president of the Arab Gulf States Institute. That's a think tank here in Washington. And Catherine Zimmerman, from whom you just heard. She's research fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and manager for AEI's Critical Threats Project. And we're talking about the political and humanitarian crisis in Yemen. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to a loyal listener, Abid Al-Krim Al-Shahri from Sana'a, Yemen. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, Ambassador Sesh, talking about how we can get out of this terrible crisis in Yemen, one of the poorest countries in the Arab world, made poor now as a result of this conflict. Talk about the role of Saudi Arabia per se, how you see change in their strategy or tactics. Now, we saw recently where they came in with a humanitarian initiative with over $1 billion worth of aid and changing a delivery route of humanitarian assistance. But is that more of a Band-Aid? I mean, how much does that really help? To what extent could changes in their strategy affect the trajectory of this conflict?
Well, I think we need to see a change in their strategy. I don't think that these recent announcements, well, the $2 billion infusion of cash into the Central Bank of Yemen was important. It stabilized the rial and it kept prices from going through the roof. That was very important. This new humanitarian assistance, this air bridge they're claiming to want to begin between areas in Saudi Arabia and elsewhere and Marib in Yemen, I think it may be a pipe dream. I cannot imagine this thing being effectively built and managed without collapsing, but we may see. Hopefully it'll produce some good results. What I do think is that we need to understand what the Saudis have to have in order to claim some kind of victory and be able to say this war is now done. And I think that is an assurance their national territory is not vulnerable to cross-border incursions and missile strikes. And I think also they need to make sure that the Hadi government in some fashion, one way or the other, gets reestablished long enough to have something that will suggest a successor government. And so then they've also managed to meet the requirements of the United Nations Security Council resolution, which is the one that's relevant right now. What the Houthis would settle for is a lot less clear to me. And I think that's the piece that I struggle with, is what can we get to the Houthis that will say to them, okay, now you can claim victory sufficiently and go back up to Saada and resume your lives. Is it a role in a national unity government? And if so, what does a small piece of the Yemeni population deserve in terms of representation? Another question I don't have the answer for. Sorry, Carol.
Well, you probably have a lot more answers than many others, but maybe Catherine has an answer for us as to, you know, what the Saudis, you know, what their minimum demands would be and how they can alter their strategy. But at the same time, you know, they feel under threat. We've seen missile attacks attributed to the Houthi, backed by Iran. So that's a threat. How do you see this playing out, you know, for a potential resolution?
The Saudis certainly require a government inside of Yemen that is under the Saudi influence. And this is just a long-standing relationship where Yemen is on the back door of Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia is the only country that is going to provide the necessary economic support that will allow Yemen to continue and get out of this mess in the short term. So when you're looking at that relationship, it's one that's going to have to persist, which means that the Iranian relationship with the Houthis is somewhat unacceptable to the Saudis. But they have not articulated, and the United States has not articulated well, what an acceptable relationship between the Houthis and Tehran would be, because, frankly, to demand the break of all political relations is a bit extreme when you're looking at opposition groups. And I would say that we need to start with the asymmetrical capabilities that the Houthis have, the ballistic missile attacks against Saudi Arabia. When we're looking at what the Houthis might be accepting, it's a harder question, as the ambassador noted, and it's one where Abdelmalek al-Houthi, the leader of the group, does not have an incentive right now to come to the table. He's in Sana'a. He holds more power than he would ever in a actual power-sharing government. He has more control. He has influence. He can demand national attention. And for him to step down from this would be an incredible move. And the question is how to bring pressure on him such that he feels like stepping down is in his long-term interest. I don't think he's just thinking about the movement, but I think he does have a lot of personal desire to be in power tied up in this.
Ambassador Sesh, can you gauge how much of a nefarious role Iran is playing in this conflict?
It's a little bit murky. I do think that the Iranian involvement has increased over time. I don't think there's any doubt now that the ballistic missiles the Houthis have been firing have been supplied to one extent or another by Iran. No, even the United Nations, the most recent report has said that these are manufactured in Iran. They can't identify who provided them, but I don't think the Iranian government's letting a lot of private businessmen conduct missile sales or transport out of the country without their acquiescence. So I think the involvement has definitely steadily increased. You know, in terms of weapons, I think Yemen has been an ammo dump for a long, long time. So it's not small arms. It is really these weapons, the ballistic missiles, that are the big threat, too. This is what keeps the Saudis awake at night and worry us, too, in terms of the proliferation of Iranian influence via these weapons that have not been traditionally in the Yemeni arsenal. So I think the Iranians have upped their game. But again, it's a very small investment on their part, and it drives the Saudis crazy, and the Iranians get a big reward from it.
That's very well put. How do you see the Iranian role, Catherine?
The Iranian role has changed, and it means today not only can the Houthis threaten Saudi Arabia and Riyadh in particular, but also the threat to the Red Sea, the shipping vessels that we've seen under attack and the frigates. So the attacks against the U.S. frigate, the Emirati frigate, that's something that the United States actually can't stand for, because we do require that that passage, the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, which is one of the key maritime choke points, is open and that commercial maritime traffic is going freely.
Well, that brings me to the United States and to the world, because we're seeing that this is a conflict that has ramifications not only for the Yemenis, but for the region and the world. It's a country now that the economist states the world ignores at its peril. So that brings me to the role of the United States. Mr. Ambassador, you're a veteran diplomat. We have a new administration, the Trump administration. How do you see the U.S. role? What would you advise?
Well, I would really like to see our government take a much more active and ambitious role intervening in this. And as Catherine said, assume some leadership, because there really is none at the moment. You have this quad, these four countries, the U.S., the Brits, the Saudis, and the Emiratis. The U.N. makes it a quint, if you will. It's the five powers in some fashion. But I don't see them really necessarily being the source of a resolution. I do think that the U.S. for a long time now has allowed this war in Yemen to go on because we see the Saudis and the Emiratis doing our business for us over there. They're pushing back against Iran. They're pushing back against Al-Qaeda. And that's two of our major goals in the region, is to get both of those elements away from us and not to pose a threat to our allies or to the homeland. So I don't see the U.S. as having a lot of enthusiasm for a peace process. We're still involved in a war process when I look at this. And I think that's unfortunate, because I do think it is time now, and I hope that there's some sense of exhaustion on the part of the parties to realize that they can no longer keep pursuing their goals militarily and expect to have any kind of absolute victory. They will not. And I think it's just dragging Yemen and them. The reputational risk now for Saudi Arabia and for us is deepening. And I think it's starting to put a light on inside the White House and elsewhere. They're saying we are being associated with this relentless onslaught of destruction in Yemen. We need to get away from this, or get the Saudis to figure out how to get away from it, so we don't get dragged into that whole business at the end of the day.
Catherine Zimmerman, do you think that we're at the point now where, as Ambassador said, there's sort of a light on in the White House, where the United States is now seeing itself somewhat tarnished in the eyes of some in the world by our association with the Saudi intervention, which is not going very well? Are we at the moment where we're going to see a more robust U.S. role in a positive way?
I don't know whether we'll get the robust U.S. role that we're looking for, because developing the comprehensive strategy that Yemen would need to get out of this is very challenging. And it would require us to first decide what our Iran policy is inside of Yemen, to marry that with our counterterrorism policy, and then to sit down and figure out what our policy for the state of Yemen should be, which is even more complicated than simply constraining Iranian actions inside of the peninsula or the counterterrorism actions that we've been conducting against Al-Qaeda. And that's one of the many challenges that the Trump administration faces today. You know, we don't need to talk about North Korea and elsewhere. But I do think it's heartening that the president issued a statement in early December talking about the humanitarian situation, the pressure that we've seen the White House put on Saudi Arabia to ameliorate the humanitarian situation as it can, recognizing that we have effectively outsourced to our partners, and because of this, they're trying their best, but are actually not quite making the problem better.
Indeed. Well, as we close, Ambassador, what are the prospects at this point for some kind of a diplomatic solution, and what are the consequences if this continues to drag on?
Well, I wish I were more optimistic about the prospects for a solution. Again, you look for little momentum changes. You know, I thought maybe Ali Abdullah Saleh's death might be one. It didn't really materialize. Maybe a new UN envoy will help. Maybe he'll be more energized. Maybe the Houthis will listen to him more than they've listened to his predecessor in recent years. Maybe the U.S. pressure on Saudi Arabia will continue to produce some kind of dividends. I don't know. But I think the risks, if you don't do this, is, A, you're going to get a metastasizing Al-Qaeda presence in Yemen. And I think, as Catherine has described it, you know, maybe they're on their heels, but they have not been obliterated by any measure. So there's a lot of reasons why the U.S. needs to be engaged in this, because I think if this goes badly for any much longer, all of these terrible outcomes might be more prominent on the landscape.
And Catherine, you get the last word. Aside from being a humanitarian disaster, which is in and of itself worthy of doing something about, what other risks do you see that we incur if this conflict continues to drag on without solution?
The humanitarian cost is one that we have to circle back on. It is in the United States' interest, it's in the international community's interest to intervene and ensure actually that the situation doesn't get worse. It is the worst humanitarian crisis that we've seen. And unfortunately for Yemenis, because of the way the war has gone forward, it's actually not received the sort of attention that other situations have elsewhere in Syria and Libya. For Yemenis, they're looking for assistance, and part of that is going to be actually generating the political change to get to peace such that the humanitarian conditions can start to be reversed.
Well said. And I'm afraid on that note, that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, Ambassador Stephen Sesh, former ambassador to Yemen, currently executive vice president of the Arab Gulf States Institute, and Catherine Zimmerman, research fellow at the American Enterprise Institute.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Rebecca Ward for booking our guests. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.